If your idea of a perfect August day includes eating ice cream, binge reading a Pat Conroy novel on a quiet beach, and singing along to some Barbra Streisand tunes on a long drive, you're going to like this summer vacation episode of What It Takes. We've got inspiring talks by both Barbra Streisand and Pat Conroy. Sorry, you're on your own for the ice cream. And by the way, if summer's already passed by the time you're listening to this episode, well, just pretend the day is long and sunny with great things in store. This is What It Takes, a podcast about passion, vision, and perseverance from the Academy of Achievement. I'm Alice Winkler.
Adame, this child is gifted. And I heard that enough that I started to believe it.
If you have the opportunity, not a perfect opportunity, and you don't take it, you may never have another chance.
It all was so clear. It was just like the picture started to form itself.
There was no way in which a lie could prevail over the truth. Darkness over light, death over life.
Every day I wake up and decide, today I'm going to love my life. Decide.
Decide. My advice is, if they're going to break your leg once when you go in that place, stay out of there.
And then along come these differential experiences that you don't look for, you don't plan for, but boy, you better not miss them.
On this episode of What It Takes, we're doing something a little different, something we do just once or twice a year. Instead of telling you the in-depth story of one person's life, we're going to let you hear one of the amazing things that happens at an Academy of Achievement summit. People like Barbra Streisand or Pat Conroy stand up to talk about what it takes to succeed and make a difference in front of students from around the world. Then they answer the students' questions. Barbra Streisand and Pat Conroy did not speak at the same event, but we've chosen to pair them because although they grew up in radically different circumstances, they had a moment of profound artistic and personal connection when Streisand produced, directed, and starred in the film version of Conroy's novel, The Prince of Tides. So I'm going to let Pat Conroy start us off. He gave this talk in 1993, and here's the most important thing you need to know if you aren't already familiar with The Prince of Tides, The Great Santini, The Lords of Discipline, Beach Music, or any of his other books. The South Carolina Lowcountry where Conroy grew up and the miseries of his childhood there provided enough fodder to last him his entire writing life.
I write 800-page novels. My reward is I get to give an 8-minute speech. We go quickly. Birth. I open my eyes. Mom. Beautiful. Lovely. Southern. Drawling. Uneducated. Redneck girl. Dad. Huge, 6'4", 240-pound fighter pilot. He had an IQ, the temperature of my hotel room. You look at my father, you only had two words came to your mind. Jurassic Park. I lived this childhood, if this could be called living. My sister and my 7 brothers and sisters, there were also 6 miscarriages. My sister called the miscarriages the lucky ones. And she thought these little fetuses, these little feti Conroys floating around would hear what was going on in my family and say, no way, man, I'm not going there. My mother... his family from Rome, Georgia, Piedmont, Alabama. Let me give you the names of my family on that side, and you'll know everything about this Southern family you need to know. There's Jasper Catlett, Clyde, Pluma, Cicero, Naomi, Winona. And my favorite name of all was My great uncle, whose name was Jerry Meyer Peak. I asked my grandmother, I said, where'd this name come from, Grandma? And she said, it came from the Bible. It's named after the prophet, Jerry Meyer. My mother later would tell friends and neighbors and new relatives that we came from one of the most distinguished Southern families in the history of the South. So I'd listen to this for a while. I'd say, Mom, I've met these people. And she said, son, we lost everything during the woe. And I said, it must have been a hell of a woe. And I said, I can understand them losing their land, their property, their wealth, but why can't they read? And why don't they have any teeth, Mom? My mother was the first fiction writer in my family. My father told me last year, told me these words. He said, son, if I'd beaten you more as a child, you'd be a better writer. I said, Dad, if you beat me much more, I'd be Shakespeare. And the books that I've written have come from these twin powers in my life. My mother, whose love of language raised me to be a Southern writer. And she said, son, Southerners make the best writers. And her fierce pride of the South was something that was very large in me. My father, who got depressed after we didn't go to war with Cuba during the Cuban Missile Crisis. I said, Mom, I've never seen Dad depressed. Why is he depressed? And my mother said, son, don't talk to him now. He wanted to nuke Cuba. All this comes out in what I write and what I feel and the passion for I bring to the subject of family and locale and the people that I've loved in my life. In 1984, the book I'm writing now came to, because my mother told me many things, but she never told me that mothers get cancer. She never told me that mothers get leukemia. And I went into the hospital room with Mom, my beautiful mom, I'm telling y'all, she was gorgeous. In the last days, when she weighed 80 pounds, she lost all her hair to chemotherapy. And I was staying with her, and she had diarrhea, and she was vomiting. And she said, son, you know, you shouldn't do this with me. I said, Mama, it's an honor. It's a pleasure. You did it for me. And then one night, when her wig had fallen off, the worst night of the chemotherapy, my mother would be dead in 2 weeks. And she was awake, and I was awake, and she asked me a question. She said, son, are you writing about me in the new book, The Prince of Tides? And I said, Mama, I'm not. She says, you're lying. I said, Mom, I'm a little worried you would not like the portrait I'm painting you of The Prince of Tides. Mama said, I wanted to ask you one favor. So I went up on my, you know, got on my knees by her bed, held her hand, and I said, Mama, you're in a great position to bargain. And she said, don't write about me like this. Make me beautiful. So I said, Mama, the one thing you gave to me, the one gift you gave to me as a child, is you made me love the English language. And I'm the only person in the world that can lift you off this bed. And I promise this, when they speak of beauty in the South, they're going to talk about you. Because I can set you singing and dancing and laughing off this bed, and I promise I'll do it in this book. And then my mother said, knowing the history of my books being made in a movie, said, I'd like Meryl Streep to play the role. I want to end with this very, very quick thing. My best friend was named Bernie Schein. He went to Newberry College. I went to the Citadel. I bet some of y'all are going to these small name schools here. Most of you I met, y'all are so embarrassed to tell me you're going to Harvard, Princeton, Yale. I mean, there's true embarrassment of this kind of riches so early in your life. Bernie later got into graduate school at Harvard. And he called me up after he'd been there 2 months. And he said, Pat, I've been to Harvard. I've talked to everybody up here. And I said, what are they like, Bernie? He said, I got something to tell you you ain't going to believe. I said, what is it? He said, I talked to everybody. I said, Bernie, just tell me what it is. He said, here it is, Pat. We're smarter than these guys. And what y'all need to do in this room is keep your eyes on those kids back home, because they're the ones you're going to have to watch. Because some of them are hungry and some of them are mad that you're here. And I know that because I wouldn't have been here when I was a senior in high school. Thanks very much. Yes.
My name is Josh Hellman. I'm from Tacoma, Washington. And I was just curious, you're an author and you read a lot of books and they're produced into movies. Do you watch the movies? And how do you usually feel about the movies, like how they portray what you write about in the books?
I usually feel after a movie is made out of one of my books, I feel much richer. And the problem I have is because I write autobiographically, it's funny, when my father, I brought my father down to see when Robert Duvall was playing him. And my father, I said, there's Robert Duvall, Dad. My dad's big. And I said, what do you think about Duvall? He says, they got a midget to play me, son. And my mother's being played by Blythe Danner. And Blythe is beautiful. Mama's prettier. And so usually with me, it's a sense of disappointment that they're not larger than life. Yes?
I'm Liz Pine from Chicago, and I was wondering how you feel, because, okay, when I see movies, a lot of times they're very intense emotional experiences. And I've wondered how you feel having your childhood intense emotional experiences broadcast across the screen for millions of people to watch.
Okay, I feel okay, but here's my family has problems with seeing our lives. We were watching The Great Santini. There's one scene, and my whole family's there, all seven kids, my mother, my father, we're all sitting there watching it. And the audience knew we were in there. There's one scene where Santini beats up his whole family. So the audience naturally, oh, there, and he's pounding them to a pulp. And he is having fun like that. This was Dad's hobby during our childhood. And he is having a ball. And the audience is tense. And my brother, Jim, is leaning down. And he leans out to speak to all the kids. And he says one word. He says, Bambi. Duvall is Bambi compared to Dad. Why didn't they hire Dad as an advisor if they want to know how to beat up a family? So it is always intense, and it is always emotional. But it's also fun because much better-looking people walk around pretending they're me. And I like that. Thank you all very much, Sylvia.
Writer Pat Conroy, speaking in 1993. He died last year in 2016 of pancreatic cancer at the age of 70. In 1992, the woman who Conroy called a goddess who walks upon the earth gave her talk to students at an Academy of Achievement summit. And Barbara Streisand, if not literally a goddess, is certainly one of the most revered entertainers of our era, or several eras, actually. She began her career in the 1960s, and it goes on. By the time she was 20, Streisand was a rising Broadway star, and very soon after, a recording star, too.
Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. So let's sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again. All together, shout it now. There's no one who can doubt it now. So let's tell the world about it now.
Barbra Streisand has had a number one album in each of the past 6 decades, and she's sold more records than any other female artist in history. She was the first woman to have her own one-woman special on television. That was in 1964. And later, she became the first woman to produce, direct, write, and star in a major motion picture. In short, for almost 60 years, she has made a big, bold mark on American culture as a singer, a songwriter, an actress, a filmmaker, and a champion of social causes. Not bad for a poor kid from Brooklyn.
Hi. I feel very honored to be here. It also gives me great hope to see so many gifted young people here tonight who are so talented, because it is you who will shape the future of our country and our planet. As you look ahead, it's important to realize that there's no one formula for achieving success in life. I believe you should follow your own path and measure success by your own standards. For me, success came by being true to myself, my own beliefs and passions, and by not letting the word no stand in my way. When I was very young, growing up in Brooklyn, I remember setting goals for myself and visualizing my future. At 7 years old, I already knew that there was no alternative for me. There was no other way. I wasn't satisfied with my life, and I knew I had to change it. When I first started, I was told to change my name, change my nose, change my clothes, and stop singing those cockamamie songs. And this advice came from people who supposedly knew. It was very disheartening, disturbing, and depressing to be told to do the exact opposite of what my own instincts were telling me to do. It's scary to buck the professionals, but sometimes, as I found out, they don't know what they like, they just like what they know. And they very rarely know you, only you know you, and that's your strength. Don't be afraid of the fear. I think we're all frightened in some way or another. A common theme this weekend. But it's those who are frightened and do it anyway that achieve success. Besides, fear can be the energy behind doing your best work. And don't think that once you're a success, everyone hands you what you want on a silver platter or a golden plate. Success doesn't ensure that things get easier. It's a constant battle. The first album I made in 1963 was met with the same resistance from the record company as the Broadway album I made 24 years later. The rhetoric was the same. Who's going to buy it? Nobody's interested. Yentl was a movie that was very close to my heart. Thank you. Because it was about a woman's right to be all that she can be. And The Prince of Tides is a movie I felt very passionate about and dealt with universal themes. And yet, as we said before, Yentl took 14 years to get made. The Prince of Tides was turned down by every studio. And now I'm having a hard time getting a movie made about AIDS. Am I being encouraging? On the positive side, I found out that when something comes from the heart, and the kishkis, which is a deep place, it does communicate and it does work, but not without a struggle. So be prepared for it. Maybe that's the way it has to be. Finally, one last thought. It's okay to aim for perfection, but don't count on it. I've learned from my own experience as a perfectionist that perfection is imperfection. Like the Indian who weaves a flaw into his blanket as a symbol of reality. So now, rather than seek perfection, I strive for excellence, and I feel it is the dedication to the search that is important. Success requires hard work and perseverance, but the reward lies not only in what you achieve, but in the journey itself, what you come to learn, and in the lives you touch along the way. One of the things I've learned is that no matter how lofty our goals are, we have to be spontaneous, responsive to what is, to be in the moment, open to what the universe is presenting. As Alan Watts, the Zen master, wrote, with our eyes on the horizon, we miss what is at our feet. So, to sum it all up, what have you got here? You got your obstacles, you got your battles, you got your resistance, you got your fear, you got your depression, you got your turndowns, you got your struggles, you got you and your career. So set your goals for tomorrow and appreciate the present today. Embrace it all, the positives and the negatives, and have a great time. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Paul Massengill, and I'm from Plano, Texas. And you mentioned in your talk just now about your upcoming project on AIDS that you were having a tough time with. And I'm sure that that's a topic that weighs heavily on the minds of, you know, my generation. And so I was just wondering if you could elaborate on that project and just talk about some of the problems you were running into.
It's a play by Larry Kramer called The Normal Heart. And it's about the beginning of the AIDS problem. And the universal theme that attracts me is about everyone's right to love. I remember just going to the theater when I saw it many years ago and just feeling that there's a lot of homophobia around us. And I was so deeply moved by this plight and this love story between two men and the tragedy of how our government has ignored this problem, you know, because the play talks about how the New York Times would put the Tylenol deaths on page one, but the AIDS deaths was on page, you know, were on page 52. And I just think it's a problem that has to be brought out into the forefront, and we need more money for research, and we have to respect everyone's right to love, no matter what their sexual preference is. So.
Hi, my name is Natalie Heath. I'm from Virginia City, Nevada. I was wondering, with all of your wonderful accomplishments with your Broadway musicals, your many records, and your movies, I was wondering which one was your personal favorite and why?
Oh, gosh. I really can't say. I have a love for each one of these projects that I do. That's why I don't make that many movies. I have to feel passionate about the theme. And I'm now dedicated to making films that are about positive transformations and the potential for human growth. So my last few films were directed in that direction. Yentl and then Nuts about incest and Prince of Tides about family dysfunction and how facing one's past can lead towards a better future. And this AIDS project, so I can't say that I have one particular thing that I love above everything else.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Derek Henderson. I'm from San Diego, California. A couple of years ago, I read a book called Audition by Michael Shurtleff, and in it, he talks about a time when you auditioned for him for a Broadway show of his, and you walked on stage apparently chewing a piece of gum, and afterwards he checked, and apparently there was no gum. Could you please tell us about this and what was going through your mind as you auditioned?
Sure. Well, it really started the first night I auditioned at the Bon Soir. I was 18, and I couldn't get any work as an actress. So a friend of mine told me there was a talent contest. I won this talent contest, and the guy who ran that place called The Lion took me to the Bon Soir to audition to try to get a job there. And I really did have gum in my mouth. And before I started to sing, I just took it out and stuck it on the base of the microphone. And the audience, you know, went hysterical and thought I planned it, which I didn't. But I knew a good thing when I saw it, you know. So when I went to that audition for I Can Get It For Your Wholesale, I thought this wig might be cute, you know. I also stuck it on the bottom of the chair. I stuck it on the bottom of the chair. But that's how it happened.
I'm Susan Costa from Chula Vista, California. I can't speak for all the students here, but though a lot of these talks and everything are inspiring, I admit I'm a little intimidated by some of the success of the people here. And I'd like to know, when you were a teenager, when you first started to perform with, you know, on TV with big stars, how did you feel? Were you more intimidated or inspired, and how'd you handle it?
Huh. I think I'm more intimidated now than I was as a kid. It's funny, I don't remember being intimidated. I don't know quite why. I must have had such a strong drive. I never really had any mentors or... I had this need, you know. Who knows what motivates people? I mean, I didn't have a father. I didn't like my surroundings, you know, living in Brooklyn. I used to go to the movies on Saturday afternoons and be intrigued with the reality in the movies and get out into this hot summer air in Brooklyn and say, this is not for me. I have to make my world what I want it to be. And my father died very young, and I always thought, God, life is so short. And he was an educator. He was a teacher and a scholar. And he wanted to do great things with his life, and he never got a chance to do them. So that's what motivated me. So I don't think that I was intimidated at an early age.
Hi, my name's Jennifer Sanchez-Salazar. I'm from Danville, California. From listening to your work for so many years, it's obvious that you have a great deal of feeling for everything that you sing and that your performances are always so inspired. I'd just like to know, has there ever been a time when it's been a routine, and how, if so, did you ever get rid of the feeling of a rut?
I don't think I've ever experienced that. No, it's, as I said, you know, I just remember the, you know, all the experiences I've had from this first television show. It was at a time when there had never been a one-woman show, and especially taken out of a studio. And I was very young, very, very young to have this kind of feeling. I don't particularly know where it comes from, I can guess. But I just said, I can't do that. I can't do that routine, that follow that pattern. I'd like to do this. And I remember we held out for artistic control. Not money, but artistic control. And that's what's always been important to me, to be responsible for what I do. So I experienced the struggle, and I remember, you know, before it came on, somebody telling my representative, you just ruined her career. But I like the edge. I like the danger of it, I guess. I like the risk taking. So routine is a foreign word to me.
You've been a great inspiration to me. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's the incomparable Barbara Streisand. It's a fool's errand to even try to list all she's done in her six-decade career. But if awards are a shorthand, she has won multiple Grammys, Oscars, Emmys, and Golden Globes, as well as a Tony, a Peabody, a Kennedy Center Honor, the National Medal of Arts, and the Presidential Medal of Freedom. She is one of the best-selling recording artists of all time.
Don't tell me not to live, just sit and putter. Life's candy and the sun's a ball of butter. Don't bring around a cloud to rain on my parade. Don't tell me.
Come on and belt it out, you know you want to. This is What It Takes from the Academy of Achievement. Thanks for listening. I'm Alice Winkler.
I'll march my band out. I'll beat my drum. And if I'm found out, your turn at bat, sir. At least I didn't fake it, hat, sir. I guess I didn't make it. But whether I'm the rose of sheer perfection or freckle on the nose of life's complexion, the cinder or the shiny apple of its eye. Right, sir. Ooh. love, cause I'm a comer. I simply gotta march, my heart's a drummer. Don't bring around a cloud to rain on my parade. I'm gonna.
What It Takes is generously funded by the Catherine B. Reynolds Foundation.